Welcome to Ask the Educator, a podcast brought to you by Healthmark Industries. Are you a sterile processing technician or manager? Maybe you work in infection prevention or biomedical engineering. Whether you're a frontline tech, endoscopy tech, OR nurse, or surgical services administrator, you undoubtedly have influence in medical device processing at your facility. In each episode, we speak with experts from the Healthmark Clinical Affairs team, industry leaders, or special guests from the trenches to answer your questions and bring you relevant industry information, equipping you for excellence in medical device processing. My name is Kevin Anderson, and I will be your host. Now let's get started. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Ask the Educator podcast. With me, I have Stephen Kovac. It's been a little while. He's been doing some traveling and all this good stuff, but he's back. And just thanks for joining me again on the show.
Kevin, you know I love talking. You can't stop me from talking on our profession. It's one of the best professions around. And, you know, you can call me up tomorrow and I'm ready to sit down and talk. When you said you wanted to talk about the IFUs, I says, that's great. And then you says, well, I want to talk about them a little differently. I says, that's even better, because what I think we're going to try to help our listeners and our other professionals out there is the IFU, the instructions for use, is the instructions forgotten for use. That there's a lot of information, these IFUs, that we're not really following. Is that what we're sort of going to try to talk about today, Kevin, or did I misunderstand you?
No, that's exactly right. It's something that I think a lot of us are aware of in the industry, but it becomes more and more important as we go because devices are getting more complex. The Joint Commission and other accreditation agencies come in and they ask very frequently about IFUs. And I will just say, when I kind of got started in SPD, when someone asked for an IFU, it was funny because they were really usually asking for sterilization parameters. It didn't mean this entire book of instructions. So I thought it would be a really interesting topic to get into. I know there's a lot of other programs and things like that about IFUs, but it's one of those real important topics to discuss here and there.
Well, I want to start out with one that we didn't really discuss before this. Just so people know, we do talk before we do this to make sure I don't go off on a tangent, because I'm known for doing that. But if people don't know, we do tray audits for hospitals. And I'm going to focus on something. And this is not to promote our product. It's promote quality. I see a lot of people that have these reusable bipolar and monopolar cords. And I'm not going to name the company, but I see people totally not following the IFU. And I'm going to read a couple things from this IFU. It says these cords have been validated for 25 uses. I don't see people following the uses or marking them off on a tag or whatever. They also talk about it is recommended to establish a procedural review by which the cord's electrical continuity is regularly tested. I don't see that being done. Mm-hmm. Also, this is what's very interesting. It says that they are to be put in a sonic for 10 minutes. I see people just hand wiping them and going through the window. And what's even better, and this helps you understand your sonic process, it says a high contaminated load in the ultrasonic bath impairs the cleaning action and promotes the risk of corrosion. And then they talk about the bath should be changed frequently so you don't have all this stuff floating. So you and I have done audits and decontam and trays. And I go into a department and I see hand washing these exact cords, mm-hmm. and they're not following the IFU. And then I see them go into a tray and they're okay, they're maybe looking at it. And this even says you don't coil it more than 4 to 5 inches. And I see them really tight. and I don't see anybody checking continuity, all that is in there. Well, you know, the auditors didn't come and ask me about it, so it's okay, and I don't hear of any problems in the OR. Just because there's no problems doesn't give you the right not to follow the IFU. This is one example. I got two or three more I want to throw out in this short time.
Well,
what do you
think
about this, Kevin?
Yeah, I think that's a great example because, it's funny you bring up the cords because my own personal experience, I used to work in the operating room, as many of our listeners will know, and I just happened to be in a surgical case. It was a laparoscopic gallbladder removal. And one of those cords that you're talking about, a reusable monopolar cord, literally sparked and severed right in the middle of the surgery. And I would believe that this is part of the reason why it calls for this kind of testing in the IFU. You're testing for insulation integrity, but you're also testing for continuity so that the electricity within that cord doesn't have to arc and then create this problem where it's going to damage the cord and potentially spark, lead to a fire risk, lead to potentially damage to the patient because your surgeon lost control at that point and accidentally hurt the patient, things like that. But those cords are really important. It's one of those things that you see all the time and everywhere, and you get so used to using them and whatever. But to your point, yeah, they're definitely not paying attention to how much they should be coiled. They're oftentimes not tracking the amount of uses. I've been to only, I think, one facility that was tracking uses, which
that's
pretty
good.
Impressive. Yeah, most of the time you do not see that, even with instrument tracking systems. So that was a great example and a very important one. Hopefully people understand that these cords do present a very potentially serious risk in the operating room. So what other examples did you have
to
share?
I want to do another one. And, rongeurs are really tough. You know, people talk about rongeurs and they're always dirty and so on. So I pulled up a known company's IFU, and they talk about that when it goes into the ultrasonic cleaner, the jaws in the open position in a wire mesh basket. Well, we know that people do not have their rongeurs the majority of the time in an open position. Talks about cleaning and so on. We now know that there's the take aparts, and that's probably the way people should go. But people don't read the IFU, and then it says it gives 10 minutes sonication. I see them 3 minutes, 5 minutes. There's a reason for this. These companies have done a validated program. And so this gets to a bigger question, I believe, Kevin, is if people will really follow the IFU, they're going to say, I don't have enough people. I don't have enough time to do it the right way.
That's right.
How do you benchmark? What do you do? How do we help people start to do this? And I'm going to backtrack to the first example. When we come in and help do tray audits, I call them tray audits, CPR audits, we don't just tell you your faults. We work with you and say, here are some suggestions on how to do this and to correct this so you can work on reducing the possibility of having a problem. Even if you put in all those quality checks, it doesn't mean you won't have a problem, but at least you can reduce the chance, or if something happens, you know what you've done to prevent it. So now if we start following the IFU, people, now I need 50 more people or 10 more people. I can't do sonics for 10 minutes. I can only have five. You recently were a manager, Kevin. What do you think? People like us coming in and saying, well, you should be doing this. How do we help them think this through?
Well, this is a very common issue. And I think the first thing to do is to just start using the IFU as your example and doing things according to IFU, just so you're challenging your own assumptions. Sometimes people think, oh, yeah, it's going to cost me this much more in time and productivity and whatever. And that may be true, but it also may be true for only the first couple of days while people are getting used to a new practice. And then by the time they're really proficient at it, it really didn't add a whole lot of time at all, or not a tangible amount of time. Now, assuming that their assumptions are correct and it will take them additional time and they may need additional FTEs, hopefully they're using and proficient at using their management tools, their productivity tools, their ability to speak finance in their departments to the C-suite, to the chief financial officer, to your directors. You need to understand how to submit and justify for new FTEs. Sometimes it takes educating them on your process. Sometimes it takes just numbers and things like that, measuring and bringing an articulate and educated viewpoint to the table so that they can really understand.
Yeah.
And it may be a combination of those things. So I think more often than not, we just come and we think we know we need something, and we just say that we need it because we do. And then we're not very good at the justification side of things.
Yeah.
And so that's where we need to get better. That's a gap maybe in our competency as a manager. And that's okay. That's something that we have to learn and get better at.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't necessarily be an excuse to not follow the IFU and do things the right way.
Yeah. I hate to bring this back around as something else. Is we see it with the shavers, you know, what, 10, 11 years now, been an issue, maybe longer than that. Some people buy a borescope or flexible inspection scope. They don't use it. We still see many departments that don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And not all the IFUs are the same. And I'm going to address that a little later. But if your standard of care is you should be looking at them, you should be, to reduce the chance of having that problem. And that gets back to me is, how do you define the word inspect? Just because one shaver says to do it and another doesn't, how do you inspect? And so all shavers should be that way, because that is your standard of care. And if it can happen in one type of shaver, it can happen to another.
That's right.
And if people really read the warning that the FDA put out, it suggested that all shavers adjust their IFUs, but many companies didn't. And so this is going to be the curveball I'm going to throw you right now, Kevin.
All right.
I have an IFU from a manufacturer that makes surgical instruments. These instruments have been being sold for 50 or 60 years by the same company. For their suction, it says, wash in warm water, use the appropriate brush, dry, steam sterilize according to your policy. That's it. That's all it says. Now, somebody would say, why is that? Well, this is opening up Pandora's box. That was maybe written in the 70s or 80s. Mm. So that was approved that way, even though the FDA has new labeling. The new one came out in 2017, was updated. Before that, it was 96 or it was 96 and then 2015 and 2017. New products have to follow it, but the old products don't necessarily have to adjust. So that company doesn't have to say, measure the brush or this amount of time or whatever. So if you're buying from them, that's all you have to do. But if you have another suction from another company, it could be 12 steps.
Right.
So how do you treat those same two suctions the same? I think you do it the more difficult way because you want them all done the same way. You know, that's what I mean, Kevin. Mm. As a manager, how do you handle that? What do you do?
No, I think you're onto something right there with, you know, trying to treat them all the same, but using the more rigorous process in order to achieve the optimal result. Yeah, you could be following the IFU because it's, you know, from 1955 and hasn't really been updated for a particular suction, but it's still better to maintain a consistent process with all your devices as much as you can possibly do, you know, without having conflicting information in IFUs. But if you have two like instruments and they both have very different IFUs, but the more rigorous process could apply to both, then you would go with that one to simplify variation in the process, but also provide the optimal care to each instrument.
Yeah. And just so you know, they're Fraser suctions, and you buy a Fraser suction from different companies, you have different IFUs. So you can make a good policy that all suctions. So what is written? How are you going to do it? How are you going to train your staff? And this gets back to something we addressed earlier. I think many managers in sterile processing are afraid to ask questions. They need to get risk management and infection control to help them to show that if they don't follow these, they could have dirty instruments or they could have instruments that fail in surgery. How do we bring them in to help us with our conversation? And many managers don't have the training of how do you write a good proposal? What do you do? And that gets back to just because you've passed a class, how do you make sure you're competent? Who's mentoring them? You know, this is not just simply following the IFU, it's getting the resources to do it. Because I'm going to share something with you. You filled one out for me. I've been doing this little survey that I sent out to people who actually work in an operating room. And the first question was, have you ever had a dirty or non-functional instrument in a tray used for surgery? 100% of the people said yes. So we know there is an issue.
That's right.
I'm using that to break it down into other categories. So if that's the issue, it's a quality issue. So it's, do we have the right tools? Is the staff trained properly? Do I have enough staff? You might have enough staff, but a manager might not be willing to flex his staff. Just because you have everybody coming in at 7 a.m., maybe you really need them to come in at 10 a.m. Right. Now, Steve, you're a bad guy. You're making me, I can't take my kids. Okay. There's a lot of things you have to do, but the job is I have to staff to get the work done. Right, Kevin?
Yeah, that is true. There are definitely sometimes departments where you walk into and there are some people standing around waiting for the work to come. And so there is potential opportunity, you know, that could have been a one-off day or whatever, but
yeah,
there's potential opportunity there over the long haul to maybe move your pieces around and use them a little more wisely. Hopefully that's something that managers know to do. I know it can be challenging to manage the human resources side of things. But you know, nonetheless, it is a part of the puzzle to use to your advantage in order to follow the IFUs, in order to produce a quality product for the OR and do the things that we know are right in order to protect our patients and serve them properly.
I'm going to throw one more curveball here because I think we're getting close to the time. And what we're trying to make sure is people discuss this topic and see how it impacts their department. I get this question quite a bit, and I think you have too, and our other educators have come across it. Steve, what is the correct time for my sonic? Now, if they read a lot of the IFUs or even their washer times, it usually says minimum times. So you could have some that are 5 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes. Are you going to set it and keep switching it? That's pretty hard. I think you can group items, or you find if something is 15 minutes, maybe that's how you make everything, because the one that says 5 minutes says minimum of 5 minutes. So maybe setting it at that one time or that one outlier comes, that's where you change it. But everything else could be at 10 minutes. And so if it was 8, it gets 2 extra minutes. It's not going to hurt it. But now you're not switching and doing. And that's, again, a manager understanding their workflow, their staff, how many sonics they have, the time. Because you don't want to do less than a minimum, but you can always do more than the minimum. Correct, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, unless the range doesn't allow for it in the IFU, I haven't. Yeah, it mostly depends. But yeah, generally, the longer, you know, you're allowed to do a longer cycle, not so much a shorter one, but yeah, it just depends on if it's contraindicated or not. But that being said, usually you're right. Usually they just put in a minimum amount of time for the ultrasonic or a certain part of the wash cycle, those types of things. So yeah, all really good points, especially from a management standpoint and having a consistent process throughout the continuum with all of your instrumentation.
So I'm going to help close this with, we got to talk scopes for a minute. And I know I sent you this picture that the majority of scopes have usually two IFUs. One is the operator's IFU and one is the reprocessing IFU. And many times in the sterile processing area, they don't get to look at the operator's IFU. But within that operator's IFU, it tells the operator, you know, post what to do, how to carry the scope, what to look for, even on some of them testing what they're supposed to test for. That all impacts down in decontam. And I think managers of sterile processing, or if they're doing scopes, need to get that manual and look at it and see how it dovetails into their workflow. Because if it's not being done, they can work with that manager and say, look, in your IFU, you need to do this pre-suction, post-cleaning, or whatever it is. I mean, did you know, Kevin, that there were two manuals mostly on all these scopes?
I did, because I had run in both roles. You know, I had to use the endoscope, hook it up and test it and all of that. But I also had to be aware of processing. So I was kind of in a unique situation where I had to know that, but maybe not everyone does. And I think that's a really good point to share. If you are one of those facilities that does, you know, reprocess flexible endoscopes, that is a good, important point to share with everybody. So yeah, that's a good one.
So I'd like to say to our listeners, use the IFU to put in quality in your department and use it to help explain why you need equipment and staff, but also use it to explain to your staff why this IFU is being followed, because the manufacturer did a lot of work to say, if we follow this, you should not have any issues, from testing it to cleaning it, picking the brush, detergent, and so on. And if we do it the right way, the assembly process will be better, the sterilization process will be better, and they'll be better for the patient when it's opened up in the room, and they'll have less chance of an error or some faults with it. And if we get people to understand that, maybe we won't have these errors that you and I find in all our educators when we go in to do these tray audits. We find from dirty instruments to broken box locks, these are sterile trays that we're opening up. Mm-hmm. And the IFU says you should inspect it. So how could somebody miss a broken crack, or do they not have the right microscope or magnifying glass, or, you know what I mean? It's not a simple one-stop answer. It's many things, right?
It is many things. And to your point, sometimes it's having those resources, whether it's a lighting magnification or a borescope or something like that. But sometimes it's just using the tools that are there. So you go through the whole process of getting approval for a borescope or several of them or some other expensive piece of inspection equipment. And you go and you just observe like a fly on the wall, and you see that people are shying away or not using the equipment that you invested in. Part of that, I will just guarantee you, is the fact that it is kind of newer to them. They're a little bit intimidated by it, especially if it's a little bit complicated or going to add some time to their processing. So those are types of things that we have to get better at managing and helping them get comfortable with it. Because the only way you're going to be able to implement it is to get them comfortable with it, competent with it, and efficient with it. And there's only one way to do that is to practice. So don't miss that critical step.
That's right. Well, Kevin, I hope we gave our listeners something to think about and to delve deeper into the IFU. And just because auditors who come in their department may not look to the detail. We try to help our customers. That IFU is there to help them get the resources they need to do the job correctly and to make sure there are positive patient outcomes based upon our part in the surgical procedure, which is supplying a clean and functional device that can be high-level disinfected or sterilized and ready to use, you know, and that's what the IFU is for, I think. So,
excellent. Thank you, Stephen. Yeah, I agree. And get into those IFUs, make sure your staff know how to access them, make sure there aren't things missing from your process that you need in order to do it correctly. But yeah, Stephen, thanks as always. Great job talking IFUs with you. It's been fun.
We'll see you, Kevin. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
That wraps up this episode. Just to recap, I spoke with the one and only CPD guy, Stephen Kovac. We talked about a variety of things regarding IFUs. How well do you know your IFUs? Are you following them correctly? Are you using them to help with quality improvement efforts? Or maybe you're in need of new equipment. Many times you can find justification for equipment purchases in the IFUs of the devices you process. We know that IFUs can range from too simple to too cumbersome, but we need to know what the IFUs encompass so that we can do our jobs correctly. I want to thank you for tuning into the show. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Got an issue or a question you'd like us to address on the show? Remember, you can always submit those to our email address, asktheeducator@hmark.com. Thanks again. All opinions expressed on this show are those of the presenters. Before using any medical device, it is important to review the device manufacturer's instructions for use.